I've always sensed that there's more to this story than what's actually said. And when I sit with someone and listen to them, I have a strong awareness that there's something else. And I think my whole hunt as a person is for A, the truth, and B, and what is that?
Welcome to the Curious Coach podcast. So buckle up as we travel around and explore the world of coaching. Here's your host and professional coach, Stephen Clements.
In this full-length episode, I had the pleasure of interviewing Colin Brett. Colin founded Coaching Development Limited in 2003, and since then has been providing the highest quality of training in Ireland, the UK, and indeed beyond. I first met Colin in 2018 during my coach training with trainer and coach Alva Harrington in Portlaoise here in Ireland. Colin popped over for a day to give a coaching demo and help us to understand and challenge those pesky little things called assumptions. I absolutely loved talking with Colin. In my mind, he's a philosopher, thinker, and a very open and sincere human being. In fact, I was left pondering many areas of this interview for quite some time afterwards. I hope you also enjoy this truly amazing conversation as I hand over to Colin and ask him to introduce himself.
So I'm Colin Brett, and I work mainly in the field of coaching. I spend quite a lot of my time training coaches, and I also have a practice which goes slightly beyond coaching as such. And apart from that, I am an intrepid traveler.
So I suppose I'm curious by how you define a practice that goes beyond coaching.
So, Stephen, thanks. That's an interesting one. I think coaching's a really useful way of helping people clear their minds and make up their minds and find a way of moving forward. That probably includes them thinking about what they want to actually do, but it also includes who they want to be and how they want to be that. Beyond the traditional approach to coaching and beyond the questions of why am I here on earth and what my mission and what my purpose are the more, let's say, spiritual things about if this is my time on earth, what does the universe want from me, which fascinates me. I'm also really interested in the dynamics and the currents that run between people and how our history seems to reappear, not only our own history, but also the history of other places where we've worked and we somehow carry with us, or our family history that pops up in the moment, even though it may be transgenerational. So that's my... That's another interest. It's been around for quite a while. It also, I'm also very interested in working with individuals and working with groups of people. What's the field that each person carries around with them? And what happens when my field, so to speak, meets your field? So that energetic field, that information field that we carry, all very esoteric.
Yeah, it certainly sounds fascinating and also very deep.
Yeah, I think it's beyond, and deep's probably quite a good word for it.
When you refer to it as a field beyond coaching, is it maybe a case that you're ahead of where coaching currently is at, and this is something where coaching will as it matures and gets older, will head towards?
I think, yeah, actually, I think that's right. If you look at the history of coaching and how it's developed, then it's highly likely that we're going to start moving into that which is not yet known. And we could say that this is a form of advanced intuition. But there are several thinkers in the coaching world who mentioned the quantum field and how that those energy fields actually transmit information from one person to another, even though we don't know how that happens.
Yeah, it's kind of fascinating in terms of how much we know, but how much more we don't even understand or can begin to know at this stage.
Yes, absolutely. Coaching's all about not knowing and not understanding. And so it is in itself, it invites in itself a leap of faith. How do we know that what the coach says is right? Well, we don't. Or how is it the coach picks something up? We don't know, but she does. So I think on one hand, coaching is really trying hard to be more and more scientific and to prove itself to similar professions. But on the other hand, I think that there's a whole unspoken, a great field of unknowing that we have to trust.
I suppose I'm kind of struck by the connection with something I suppose I can relate to in terms of the embit or embraining concepts around the fact that science is catching up with that we have at least three brains that they can now prove through science. And it feels a little bit like where you're heading is somewhere that science is still to catch up with, but it will get there.
Well, yes. I've always wondered about consciousness and what you might call spirit or soul, and whether the two are actually the same thing. And then if the spirit or the soul is a reality, and then it is possibly our consciousness that doesn't die when the body does. And if consciousness doesn't die, but it hangs around somewhere, then to what degree might it be possible to receive information from that? And there is some research being done on whether consciousness is not resident in the brain, but is more a cloud. It's like a cloud, and the brain is the piece that receives and sends signals to and from this cloud of consciousness. The more we can move away from that which is obvious to that which might also be true, the more we're going to be useful as coaches.
And I suppose there's a number of things pop up there, and I suppose it is that challenge of, as a coach, remembering that not having the answers is actually perfectly okay, and being okay with the unknown, and that's actually a really good and powerful thing to be okay with, but it's also very challenging to embrace.
Well, if you think of it, we're brought up to have to know. Not knowing is considered to be a weakness or a mistake. And one thing that we have to unlearn as coaches is knowing. We seem to attach a huge security to having an idea or knowing a fact. So it's quite scary to say to someone, I don't know, and isn't that great?
Yes, rather than turning around saying, but why am I paying you this money when you don't know?
Yes, exactly. Well, what happens when we don't know? I think when we don't know, then we're free to think differently. Or we're free to think broader, wider, out of our own box, rather than stick with the same old. And that's what coaching is. It's about that which is not yet, and which could be, rather than my usual.
Yes, which is the whole premise that you're looking for, because if the usual was working for you, you wouldn't be coming to coaching.
Exactly.
And I suppose I'm curious by where you're at now in terms of the interest in this particular area and sort of the very deep and meaningful exploration of the existential coaching and the field and the interactions and all of that area. How did you journey to that point?
I think I've always sensed that there's more to this story than what's actually said. And when I sit with someone and listen to them, I have a strong awareness that there's something else. So that's one piece. And I think my whole hunt as a person is for A, the truth, and B, and what is that? And I have always seemingly been able to hear what is not necessarily spoken, but implied. And picking that up and saying, this is an idea that's presenting itself, how does it sound to you? And then, here's another idea. What sense does it make to you? And then 1 + 1 might mean 2. So that's something that I've always, in a very unformulated way, had around me. And sometimes it works clearer than other times.
And was that always, I suppose, you know, has this always been to you coaching, or did it start out as something else and then you discovered coaching and had that eureka moment?
No, I always did that. But it was never... So people have always talked to me. I've always thought that I had written on my forehead, talk to me. People always have. And I remember many years of sitting there thinking, and why are you telling me this? And what do I say? And the very fact that I never knew what to say was probably quite useful, because as we know, people then hear themselves if we don't interfere with them, with our own good ideas. And they often come to a realization that they find quite useful. So I was once taken on a personal growth weekend by friends, and it really was around the question of who are we? It was based on a particular type of psychology with a strong spiritual bent. And I kind of enjoyed it and went back for another weekend and another. And then with time, I found a training course in Rogerian counseling, so client-centered work. Took that and yet found that I was not only a listener and a listener at depth, but I had quite a strong analytical interest as well. And so when people would say things, I'd ask them, and what does that mean? And what does that mean to you? And we'd help them piece together some sense. So I stopped teaching and slipped into counseling and enjoyed doing that. Trained as a supervisor, but then found one particular school of psychotherapy that appealed to me, which was transactional analysis. And I spent quite a lot of time learning TA theory and applying it in my work. I burnt out as a counsellor, and after a while of not wanting to be around people, found myself working as a management trainer, so running courses in-house. And one day someone accused me of being a coach. And I said, I'm no coach. I'm a once was counsellor. And she said, no. Then I thought about what I do. or what I did in those days in organizations. And it was using the psychological theories that I knew to help people understand what might be going on in their heads in a way that didn't mean they lost face in front of their colleagues. So rather than say, clearly you are, this is your father telling you that you can't give a decent presentation, or that you shouldn't put yourself forward, or whatever the old message was, I'd say something like, I wonder how it would be if you really focused on what was happening here and now, and you look around the group that you're making a presentation to, and you notice the people who are nodding and smiling rather than the ones who are shaking their heads. So I found that I was using what I knew to help people move forward and to change their minds, but we didn't go through the whole analytical piece. And that's how I then thought, all right, well, maybe if this is what coaching is, I'd better get a piece of paper that says I've done a training in it. So I did. It was fascinating looking back on it.
I suppose a couple of questions there. Whenever you said you stopped teaching, what were you teaching at that time?
English as a foreign language, German to Americans, and Russian to Germans.
Oh, wow.
I know. It was my brain was well fried. It was mainly English as a foreign language, though.
And then the switch to coaching, you know, so how long would you say you've been coaching for now at this stage?
So formally, I got my first qualification, I think, 14-ish years ago. And I started to teach coaching formally 15 years ago. So if you add 5 years before that, probably 3 years before that of training and then finding out that I could do this and actually I could do it relatively well, and did I want to do more of this, and no, it's not psychotherapy and it's not counselling. It's probably been a formal 18 years journey.
I'm getting a real sense as well that it feels like it's a combination of something that you're very intuitive about and also feels a bit like a calling.
Yes. So I've always struggled with those two things because they're not facts, are they? And I find a huge security in facts. But I seem at the same time to only use facts as a backup when I need them. I think the reality is, it's all about who do we think we are? And therefore, out of our awareness, how are we crafting our lives? And that's not something that someone can express clearly until they've got the space to do that in. And our job as coaches is to use what people say and to reflect it back and to listen to what's not said and what's implied. And to walk with someone as they move into the great unknown, which is themselves. I think it's themselves on one hand, but also into the future.
I suppose the other thing that popped into my head there was, it sounds like there's a tension between Colin the spiritualist and Colin the scientist or academic.
Yes.
And I suppose I'm curious, how does that tension balance itself out, or does that matter?
It's a struggle. It's a struggle between living between two realities. One which won't be denied, and one that says, but the other doesn't exist. But I can live between two worlds. I do live between two worlds. And I think they're both equally real. So the thing is, I think our senses get in the way. And we've been taught most of our lives that what we see and what we hear is true. Unfortunately, the message says, only what we see and hear is true. So what we can't prove with us or indicate with or learn with from our senses doesn't exist. But then what does exist mean? Does exist mean that we have a a certain form and a certain number of days on the planet? If that's existence, is everything else not? So we're back to the fact that consciousness doesn't die or stop when the human body does. I think that we live in multiple realities. We're just used to being in one particularly. So I've become really fascinated with two things. The first is the representations that we have in our heads. So this is psychodynamic thinking. And that is that in my head, somewhere I have a representation of who I think I am. And then I have in my head a representation of who I think you are or people are. And what happens then in my behavior and in my interaction is I try to fit me into the picture of who I think I am. And I try to fit people into the picture of who I think they are, which is all quite confusing, but it's the way we survive. And so I can have multiple realities where one example of that is that me in my head and you in my head have an argument. Well, I'm pissed off with you. And I tell you that I'm really angry because blah, blah. But when in the next 2 minutes I actually meet you as a person, there's then a conflict between the real you and me and the me and you in my head. And I find that really fascinating because you don't know I've been angry with you. So that's one thing. And the other thing that, but then there's also in my head, there's my concept of me and how that concept of me has lots of yes buts and only ifs around it. And so I think that coaching at depth invites me as a coach, as me as a client, to go inside and think, well, who do I think I am? And what constructions and limitations am I putting on who I think I am that I then live out in reality? So we are who we think we are. And that's why I believe entirely that coaching is really valuable when someone can reflect on who they think they are and how they be in the world. If you only do transactional level coaching and you focus on behavior, then potentially you're missing the opportunity to make significant and real and lasting change. So that's one preoccupation I have. And the other one is constellations and how constellations actually can take the representations in our heads or the multiple realities in our heads, and they make them visible and audible.
So constellations as in star constellations or...?
As in organizational constellations or family constellations.
Okay.
So it's where basically either an object or a person represents me and another object or another person would represent the dilemma and so on.
Yes. Okay. I suppose I'm curious about how's the journey along the path for the last 18 or so years and the exploration, I suppose, that you've done in this whole area changed or transformed you during that time?
I think I've become a much less judgmental person, he said with some shame. So one thing that I have come to believe fundamentally is that when someone's acting a certain way that I don't like, judge, find strange, whatever, I remind myself that I don't know his story. It's almost a mantra. I don't know people's story. I don't know what their experiences are, where they're coming from, how their life is. I only get a snapshot of them at a particular moment. And I think what that's done for me, Stephen, is it's allowed me to be, as I said, much less judgmental of others, but also of myself. And though I'm slightly cynical about the word, I think that I have become much, much, much more compassionate. And indeed, one of the best books I read last year was called The Compassionate Mind. And I absolutely think that one reason coaching works is because the coach is, so to speak, a compassionate listener. And there's something very magical about that. I think it's healing at quite, it can be healing at a deep level.
I suppose it's also interesting that compassionate listener that the coach is that something that's becoming more important given the way the pace of life is going at the minute?
Yes, absolutely it is. I think that the old structures, so when you were little, the world was different and social relationships were different and family relationships were different. And I think what's happening is that we're falling more and more in love with the illusions that our cell phones create. Having a relationship by text is very, very, very seductive because it's all about my reality and only my reality. I don't have the bother of interacting with a real person. Only I can read stuff into what they read, into what they write. I can say my most innermost thoughts and not get criticized. And the problem is that we are moving, I think humanity at the moment is moving away from real interactions into something more easy and ideal and illusory and technological. This might continue, but what is happening is that social isolation is growing. To a degree, I think we're losing the skill of being with people and being with each other. And I think that coaching is going to be a place that offers a thinking space or a being space where we can find ourselves. I think that's primarily what coaching can offer. It's a place where we can find ourselves. The other part of me, of which there are many, thinks that, yes, it is a space of finding selves, but it can also be a space of creation. So coaching actually says, not only who are you, but and who do you want to be? And so I think that most of us lead our lives as human doings, but we call ourselves human beings, even though we do precious little being, because we're always busy. And I don't think we're human beings. I think we're human becomings. Because inevitably, you're going to live a while yet. You're going to develop in one way or another. You're going to continue. But what coaching does is say, and would you like to bring some direction into your journey forwards? Rather than just bumbling on, how about having a think about what you'd really like to be heading for? I think that's what coaching's got to offer. So purely future-oriented development work, development with direction. But of course, the downside is that it's hard work, that changing our life habits creates demands a commitment that we might or might not have, and it means that we have to be responsible.
I love that. The way you put that there in terms of human doing rather than human beings, that's fabulous.
Yeah, but we are actually human becomings. I am amazed at my own ability not voluntarily to sit down and say, okay, so in 12 months' time, how do I want my life to be different? I seem to have some inbuilt mechanism that says, oh, don't think about that. But what a coach does, of course, is say exactly that. And so there's something in the dialogue that's missing for me on my own. I think it's the relationship or having the external person who says, no, hang in there. Don't just go and make a cup of tea and forget it.
I suppose I'm wondering, is there a fear in there as well by doing this by yourself? If you sit down and confront yourself and where you want to be, that if it doesn't happen or doesn't get there or...
But that's life. The point is that you do some thinking about where do you want to end up in 5 years' time? If you think, Stephen, that you've got to where you are in life without... probably without too much thinking about it and planning it, then, and that's probably true for most of us, how would it be if you actually sat down and said, I want to craft my future? Mm. The life that I've made for myself is good enough, but actually, you know what? I'd like it to be a bit better. I'd like a bit more of this and a bit less of that. And that's hope, but hope alone is useless. It needs a plan, it needs some deliberation, it needs action, and it needs us to be responsible, not to blame them if we don't get what we want, and not to shrug and say, oh, well, that's life, isn't it? I think to a degree, within biological and social limitations, we really can develop ourselves, and I think that coaching is a place of personal development.
How do you see coaching itself as a profession evolving over the next number of years to
mm-hmm. So if we are getting more and more out of touch with life and people and spending more and more time working on the internet and then ordering food in through the internet and watching films on the internet and never leaving our four walls, then sooner or later we might feel lonely, or we might begin to wonder, what's it all about then? So I don't think this is a problem as such. And so that question of what's life all about then isn't necessarily something I take to a counselor or a therapist. And I think that coaching can be the place of reflection and thought and design. But it's not only around behavior and how I do my life. It's around how I be me in my life. Or it's about how I be me in the life that I want to create. So I think that coaching could become one of those opportunities for developing our own well-being. That's slightly different from the goal-orientated, outcome-focused processes that coaching was initially. It's much more about a place for future thought and personal development. And I think in its very, very everyman form, it's a place where I can go and talk. I can go and have a conversation that's actually good for me. Years ago, many years ago, when I was starting my training as a therapist, I went on a meditation weekend with one of the big guys, very, very big teaching and supervising transactional analyst. He was giving a meditation weekend, and yeah, it was a meditation weekend. And someone said to him, why are you reducing your practice as a therapist? And he said, therapy, as I've learned it and practiced it, focuses on what's wrong in our lives. And he said that his experience was that the more you focus on what's wrong, the bigger it gets. So the energy or the interest feeds the fire. And so he moved into meditation and having useful conversations rather than trying to cure sickness, social illness, pathology. And I think that we are moving much more in, and let me state very clearly, I think that therapy is really, really important. I think counseling serves a very, very basic need that we have, which is to be not unhappy. And I think that coaching can be a place where we think more of, and what does wellness mean to me? What does happiness mean? How can I move towards that? How can I have a life worth living? And I think that it's just a good place to go and talk about what it is for me to be well in myself. And we're also trained to fix other people. And so if I tell you that I'm not feeling too good, you'll try and give me solutions rather than saying, so what do you want instead then? Or how could you? What would need to be happening for you to feel better? I think the fix-it element of our society, which is absolutely useful, sometimes can not help us to think deeper about what's really, really, really important to us.
And just to jump back to a question around spirituality, and feel free to tell me this is an area you don't want to go to, but I was curious around, for you, distinction, if there is one, between spirituality and religion.
I think there is. I think that religion has a particular set of beliefs and spirituality doesn't. I think that if I belong to a certain religion, then I have a certain concept of God, and then I have a certain concept of other people who are and who are not in the same group. And I think that spirit is a much broader concept than... I think religion implies adherence to a particular set of doctrines, and I think that spirit doesn't. And I think that spirit is the same as universal intelligence. And I do believe that we live in an intelligent universe, and some people might call that God. But I also think that it's a benevolent universe that we live in.
And benevolent in what way?
Yeah, isn't it interesting? I don't think that the universe wishes us ill. I do think there's that universal energy as such that spiritual healers use, Reiki practitioners use, or even coaches, counselors, and psychotherapists, is valueless in the sense it's neither good nor bad. It's pure energy that we give each other. But I believe that the universe as such is benign. It doesn't wish us ill. I can hear my colleagues, all of who listen to the podcast, taking a sharp intake of breath and saying, oh, yes, but.
I suppose just to, again, jump back again as well to how did you make the leap from starting out in this journey to creating coaching development and going down that route?
I trained as a coach with one of the very well-known bodies in London and really struggled for the first 12 days because I thought this is simply counselling by another name and was quite oppositional. And then on the 12th day, I had my epiphany and realised that really coaching is not counselling, really not. And began then to talk to the other people in the group. And I found myself saying to Philip, I think that this is going to be really interesting going forward. And I asked Phil, who'd done more years of coaching, many more years than me, if he would be interested in making DVDs, because there were no DVDs of coaching. So we saw there was nowhere you could go. There's nothing on YouTube. And we decided that we'd make a series of coaching DVDs. And at that time, I was teaching in County Tipperary and teaching counselling. And I mentioned to the Tipperary Institute, as was, that I was training as a coach. Oh, they said, what's that? And I told them, they said, we think that's jolly interesting. Don't you want to teach it? So I ran back to Phil and said, here, I've got this potential contract. But it's not to make DVDs, it's to run a coach training program. And that's how coaching development started in the once Tipperary Rural Business Development Institute, which was the most marvelous place. And then the next year we ran it in London, and we applied for accreditation for the program. And it continues. 15, 16 years later, we were incorporated on the 11th of November, 2003. So we've just had our 15th birthday. So I don't perceive coaching development to be mine. I think it has a life of its own. And I'm the guardian.
I suppose from there, it's fair to say you've broadened out even beyond Ireland and the UK.
We still teach in both. The number of courses in Ireland has doubled, and in England it's trebled. We teach in with another associate in the Baltics and Finland. We have quite a thriving course in South Africa and India. And then around the... So if you think that coaching is a profession, then it needs to be it needs to have an identity, and it needs to follow certain guidelines, and it needs to be tight, so that A, people know what they're buying, and B, it offers quality. So we do other things as well, like teach coaching skills for managers, team coaching and supervision, all around the same focus, which is development through conversations.
Do you know how many coaches you've trained at this stage?
Sadly not. But I can tell you that it must be something like 1,500, which is amazing, with Oliver's work in Ireland and ours in London, and the other courses that run worldwide. We've been really bad at following up who got an accreditation from one of the coaching bodies. But I do know that over the past 3 years, three of our colleagues have been on the board, the global board of the Coach Federation. And looking at the current board of the UK ICF, we're also well represented.
And I suppose on that, in terms of the likes of the Association of Coaching, the ICF and the EMCC, do you see there being a point where they come together and, I suppose, build up the profession of coaching even further, the way maybe psychotherapy has gone or such like?
I think that the three associations now talk with each other, which they didn't way back. And I think that they offer slightly different approaches and understandings of what coaching is. So I think that there's room in the UK, certainly for the European Mentoring and Coaching Council and the Association for Coaching, and for the International Coach Federation. The ICF is more American. The AC is clearly more British, as the EMCC is, at least its origins are in Britain. But they have slightly different focuses. I don't think one's better than another. We pledged our allegiance to the Coach Federation because that's all there was at the time, and because I can't face applying for accreditation again.
Just a couple of questions to wrap up, if you don't mind.
Go right ahead.
If you were to gift a book, which would it be? And I appreciate that. I appreciate there's lots of choices out there. So,
On coaching,
I'll let you interpret that question.
I think it's called The Art of the Possible by Zander. That's around and about what coaching is. For people interested in transactional analysis, a really nice starting off point is Counseling for Toads, as in Toad of Toad Hall. Funnily enough, so one of my masters is in positive psychology, and a really nice book on post-psych is called Positive Psychology, Theory, Research and Applications. It's one of those very theoretical books that's written in such a human way that it's eminently readable. I recommend The Compassionate Mind, which has got a lot of personal development exercises, but you asked for one book and I've given you four. That's because I'm looking at my books and thinking, no this, no that.
But all good choices. I suppose the other question that I'm always curious about is, there's a world of training out there available for coaches, and you know, obviously the courses that Coaching Development run are fantastic at starting that process and setting people up for success from the start. But beyond that, for yourself, you know, if time and money wasn't a barrier, what's the one training course that you would still love to do?
I've just committed to another year of training in constellations, with a focus on constellations in everyday life and organizations rather than family constellations. But what my great frustration is that I want to do a doctorate in existential therapy, because my interest, one of my interests is how coaches work with anxiety and depression at boardroom level, because we shouldn't. It's not ours to deal with. And yet, I think for many people in senior positions who are struggling with what's life all about and feeling miserable, they don't want to go to a therapist, but they can see themselves going to a coach. So the coach finds herself in sort of uncharted territories and in this grey area. And it's the grey area that fascinates me.
And why are constellations important?
Because they put a framework around the representations in our minds, and they can make the invisible visible. And when I work in organizations where I don't do many constellations, I use something called serious play, which is using objects or Lego to actually work with the representations in our minds of who do we think we are as a top team? Who do we think we are as managers? How do we see success, et cetera, et cetera. So I really like the use of objects in a constellation-y sort of way.
And is that making the, bringing it into something that's visual and tangible?
Yes, it also avoids too much words, because when someone's built a model using serious play and they explain the model, they can't dance around the model, it's there. When we're kids, we learn to lie, we learn to hide. Adults are really good at it. Serious play doesn't give you that opportunity.
You mentioned that one of your masters is in positive psychology. How many masters have you?
4. History of the German language, training, organizational analysis, and the most recent is positive psychology and coaching psychology. So there you have the scientific piece.
Would it be fair to say a lifelong learner?
Yes, please.
Yep.
Fantastic. I really appreciate your time today. So thank you very much for participating.
You're very welcome. Thanks a lot. Take care, Steve.
Wasn't that something truly special? I feel really blessed with how open and sharing everyone, and especially Colin, has been with allowing me to interview them about their own journeys and views on coaching, as well as being so generous with their time and wisdom. And I'm fortunate that as I continue my diploma in coaching and work towards my own credential with the ICF, to be helped further by Colin and coaching development. So thank you. I hope you also find this interview useful. And as always, I'd love if you'd reach out and share your thoughts, ideas and feedback with me. You can reach me at stephen@stephenclements.ie, and you'll find links and further notes on the show page at stephenclements.ie/podcast. And don't forget, that's Stephen with a PH. Thanks for listening, and until next time, don't forget, stay curious.